This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Gretch, I know from my own experience that baby making is not always simple. There is a lack of knowledge surrounding how to get pregnant. And when you want to conceive, there can be a lack of understanding and resources. Frida Fertility is the only one-stop shop that makes it easier to make a baby with a set of solutions for everything from reproductive health to ovulation tracking to conception aid.
Frida is simplifying the journey to parenthood with products that help you go from trying to making a baby. Frida products are innovative, easy to use, and accessible, from ovulation prediction to at-home insemination kits. This is baby making simplified. Find Frida Fertility on Amazon, at Target, and select CVS stores near you. That's Frida Fertility, F-R-I-D-A, Frida Fertility. Hello and welcome to Happier, a podcast where we explore strategies and solutions for making life happier. This week, we'll talk about why you should treat yourself like a dog. And we'll talk about ways for obligers to resist when people expect them to eat or drink something. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature. I'm in New York City, and with me is my sister, Elizabeth Kraft, who always treats me like a dog when we're together.
That's me, Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in Los Angeles. And I don't know about that, Gretch. I guess I give you treats.
Now, listen, you have some exciting news to share.
Yes. Sarah and I, my writing partner and co-host of Happier in Hollywood, have sold two pilots. So we sold one to ABC and one to CBS. So we're starting the whole process of doing pilots and trying to get shows on the air. So if anybody wants to follow that process, we talk about it in detail on Happier in Hollywood, as well as many other things. But check it out, because we will be filling you in as we go.
Well, I remember back in the day when you were just starting out, and if somebody had told you that the day would come when you had two pilots that had been sold like that, you would have just been staggered. So it's very exciting.
Yes. So hopefully at least one of them will be, will actually become a television show. Comes the hard part.
Yeah. The suspense begins to build now. And we've been having so much fun touring together.
Yes.
We have more shows coming up. We have Providence, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, and Charlotte.
Yes. Just go to GretchenRubin.com/events.
Yes. Please come. Bring your friends. We love seeing listeners live in person.
Yes.
So this week, Elizabeth, our Try This at Home tip is to treat yourself like a dog.
I love this. And it comes from Eliza, your daughter, my niece.
Yes. So at college, they're much better these days at having support for students. And they have advisors and they get together and they really try to help them take good care of themselves. And one of the things that her advisor said was, you should treat yourself like a dog. Meaning, would you treat a dog the way you treat yourself? You want to feel like I do treat myself as well as I would treat any dog that I was taking care of.
Yeah. Like with a dog, you make sure that the dog has time outside and exercise and fresh water and also healthy food, not just treats, and fresh air and lots of sleep.
Yeah. And if your dog needs attention, you take him to the vet right away. You take your dog to the groomer, you make sure that your dog has plenty of time to socialize with other animals. Like our dog, Barnaby, is super social. He really needs to have time with other dogs. If your dog is misbehaving, you get them help so they can behave themselves better.
And of course, you give your dog affection.
Yeah.
So you need affection as well.
Right. They need to have fun. They need to have time to play. They need somebody to play with them. And I think it's very helpful to think about ourselves in this way, because it turns out that the basics that dogs need are the basics that we humans need. We need all the things that they need.
Yeah, Gretchen, it reminds me of our segment, Treat Yourself Like a Toddler. Way back in episode 7, we talked about treating yourself a toddler, and this is like shades of that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because it's slightly different in my mind, because when I think of treating myself like a toddler, I think of myself as like kind of the ticking time bomb, because if you're taking care of a toddler, you're like, if they don't get their sleep, this is going to be a terrible situation. If they're too hot, they're too cold, if they're hungry, like you feel like you've got to, I do feel like that it's going to go drastically wrong if you don't pay attention to these details. But with a dog, it's almost kind of the opposite. Like they're helpless. They only get what you give them. And so you have to have a responsibility, because they're in your care. They're utterly in your care. And they really can't, the way that they would act up or ask for help is even more limited than a toddler could do. They don't have any recourse. And so you have to be considerate of them and forward thinking of their needs in an even more intense way.
Yeah, you really need to be kind to yourself the way that you want to be kind to your dog.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wonder also if this kind of framework might be of special help to an obliger. So Elizabeth, you can speak to this as an obliger. Because sometimes with obligers, it's like they can get the outer accountability they need for inner expectations by thinking of themselves in the third person. Like Gretchen right now doesn't want to exercise, but future Gretchen will be really disappointed if now Gretchen doesn't do it. Or thinking of yourself in the third person and treating yourself like a dog is in a way thinking of yourself like in the third person.
Yeah, I do think it's helpful for obligers to think of ourselves in the third person, because it can create outer accountability. I also think just the fact that an advisor was saying this in this particular case with Eliza, it's like a person of authority saying, I'm telling you, you have to treat yourself as well as you treat your dog, you know, is helpful, because then you have a measure of like, okay, did I go outside today, or was I just writing my paper all day?
Right.
Okay, I need to go outside. I need to eat a full, you know, meal, all of those things. So I do think it could be really helpful.
And I thought this was a great way to communicate that, especially to someone like Eliza, because Eliza is such a dog lover. I mean, she loves dogs. She loves Barnaby. And her standard of care for Barnaby is so high that I think you're right. It kind of creates a measurement of, well, what's reasonable? What would you consider to be reasonable for Barnaby? Well, surely you should give yourself that same. And it's almost like in thinking of your third yourself as the third person, it's almost like your body is like the earthly clay part of yourself. But in a way, it is subject to your mind, to your whims, to your direction. And so you almost have to think about that kind of earthly body that's moving around like your dog that's following you around on a leash, because it's your mind that has to decide what it gets. And so it is that sort of imaginative form of outer accountability.
Yeah, the other thing is, if you think about treating a dog well, then the dog thrives.
Yes.
If you don't treat a dog well, the dog does not thrive.
Right.
So what does that tell you? If you don't give yourself like these basic things that you would give your dog, it's going to go downhill.
Right. Your coat is going to be dull.
Exactly.
Your nose is not going to be the right temperature. You're going to chew up the furniture.
Yes.
You're going to dig into the trash.
Yes.
Well, let us know if you do try this at home and how treating yourself like a dog works for you. Let us know on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Drop us an email at podcast@gretchenrubin.com. Or as always, you can go to the show notes for this episode. This is episode 243. So go to happiercast.com/243 for everything related to this episode.
Yeah. And Gretchen, for those of us who don't have dogs, I think we should think of imaginary dogs that we're that we're treating ourselves
or
as.
Your childhood dog. Treat yourself like Paddywhack.
Yes.
You took good care of Paddywhack.
Yes.
Yeah. Our schnauzers are growing up.
Coming up, we've got a happiness hack that's something not to say. But first, this break.
There are some stories from our mother's life that I love to hear about. I love hearing about how she played with a tin dollhouse when she was a girl. And just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for our families forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother and mother figures for years to come. And it makes a wonderful keepsake book so you never, never lose these wonderful stories and memories.
Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, like, what was your favorite toy as a little girl, or what was your first job? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/happier. That's storyworth.com/happier to save $10 on your first purchase. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, Gretchen, it is time for this week's happiness hack. And I know that you love identifying situations where people had just the right thing to say. And this week's hack is kind of the opposite of that.
Yes. It's much harder to find out what to say, what to say in a tough situation. But it is also useful to know what not to say. And it occurred to me when this recently happened to me that it's almost never effective to tell someone, calm down.
Because telling someone to calm down does not make them calm down.
It does not. It makes them feel more annoyed, more worked up.
Yes.
Often feel condescended to. And it's just not a helpful thing to say. And yet, it's so tempting to say that. And I tell people to calm down all the time. And yet, but now I'm really going to steel myself to stop because I think it's very, very counterproductive.
I know. I wish there was some other phrase you could say instead, but I can't think of, you know, what it would be.
Well, one thing, mom says it in an ever so slightly different way to me, and she doesn't say it to me in the moment. So it's not like an admonition in the moment, which is, I think, when it's very annoying, but she will also often say to me, because, you know, I do get very, very worked up. I'm very high strung. And she'll say, now remember, stay calm.
Yeah,
and
that's stay just calm.
Stay calm. And I will often, remind myself, like I hear her voice in my ear just being like, stay calm, stay calm. And I feel like that's a more helpful thing. But in the moment, maybe the way is to try to say, let's, instead of you need to calm down. It's more like, let's take a minute.
Let's stay calm.
Yeah, or like, let's take a deep breath or let's step back for a minute to show that you're part of whatever's happening. Because if you're telling someone to stay calm, even if it's somebody who's losing their, is like exploding with anger at someone else, and you're trying to say, as a third party, say, stay calm. I think by saying, let's, you're showing either that you're part of the problem or that you want to be part of the solution by joining with them and helping them in a situation.
Just don't say calm down.
Calm down. Start there. And now it's time for four tendencies questions. Oh my gosh, I love talking about the four tendencies.
Yes. And this question comes from Caroline. She says, I am an obliger and have a question about maintaining my good habits when socializing. I am not a big drinker and would prefer to skip a drink or limit myself to one when having dinner with friends. I do enjoy a drink, but it impacts my sleep, and sometimes just one drink can lead to a headache and hangover-like symptoms. Even as an adult, I feel there are social pressures to drink. And if you refuse a drink, many people do not hesitate to show their disappointment. As an obliger, this bothers me as I like pleasing others and going with the flow. I have had great success using accountability to form other good habits with exercise, reading, etc., but have struggled with saying no to bad habits when feeling pressured. How do obligers structure accountability for saying no? This is a good question. I think a lot of people feel this pressure to drink when they're socializing.
Well, absolutely. And I was very interested by her question because I've been thinking about this in the context of dessert and sweets because, you know, I've been working on this project about why and how I quit sugar. And one thing that many people say is, what do I do when someone says, well, I baked it just for you, or it's my birthday, you have to have some, or we're all ordering dessert, you need to have some. And Elizabeth, as you know, I used to kind of dismiss this. I thought it was people just using the concern for others loophole as a way to get cover for themselves. But really, as I've talked to more and more people, and I talked to you about it, I've come to realize that it's a really pressing concern. It's not something that you can just hand wave away. It's something people really do. They really do exert pressure on others to indulge. And people really do feel pressured. It is uncomfortable. It is hard to withstand that. And so it's a real thing. I think I didn't really take it seriously enough for a long time. Maybe because of the upholder coldness. I'm just like, whatever, I don't care what you want.
right.
But it does matter to a lot of people.
But I do think there are strategies that she can use to make it easier for herself.
Yes. Like
I think if she is with someone, if at the beginning when they're ordering, like if she's planning to have one glass of wine, to say right when they order, oh, I can only have one glass tonight. So I'm really going to enjoy this glass. One, that makes it about tonight. So it doesn't seem like you're being judgmental of the other person, because it's like, it's not that you wouldn't sometimes have more, but tonight you're only having one. And because I think it's the judgmental thing that a lot of people don't want to seem judgmental, right?
Or that, yeah, they think that, or others are feeling judged and react to that.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
And then by setting it out right at the beginning that you're only having one, then the other person isn't thinking you're going to have more. So it kind of sets a tone.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And it's sort of in that same thing about like make it about right now and sort of what's going on right now, not some sort of overall philosophy, which maybe has more judgment in it. I think when people say something like, oh gosh, lately I've been getting the worst headache whenever I drink wine. So I'm like backing off, or like, oh gosh, you know, rich foods haven't been agreeing with me lately, so I'm going to skip it. It kind of feels like, well, this is sort of a momentary thing that's affecting my body. And that's kind of, people maybe defer to that more. Now, I will say some people don't like the idea that you're kind of making excuses, you know, that you're not being totally 100% maybe truthful and forthcoming. But I'm like, whatever it takes to deal with the situation the way you want to deal with it. Like, why not? If this just makes it easy, I say go for it.
Gretch, I'll remind everyone in Malcolm Gladwell's book, Talking to Strangers, he talks about how a white lie isn't a lie. So a lie to make a social situation more fluid and like less awkward, he does not consider a lie. So I think anyone can use these excuses and feel like, you know, they have integrity and they're not lying. They're just making it easier for themselves to navigate a situation that will make it less awkward for everyone.
Right. And also so that they can achieve their aims for like, this is really backing up on her. It's making her feel she can't sleep as well. It's not working for her. So whatever she needs to take so that she can achieve that for herself. But here's the thing I would love to hear from listeners about, because as I said, I'm working about this thing about how and why I quit sugar. And I've been talking to a lot of people, hearing from a lot of people about feeling this pressure. My question is for the other side of that exchange. Are you the one who is pressuring someone to take the drink or to have the dessert? What is in your mind? What is your experience of that exchange? Because I keep hearing from people who are like, I feel this and I'm trying to manage it and here's how I manage it, or, you know, what my reaction is. But I never hear from somebody who's on the other side. Mm-hmm. And I would love to hear, what is your perception when you do that? When you say, oh, you have to have one. Oh, just one. Oh, I made it myself. Oh, I'll feel disappointed if you don't partake. Oh, it's my birthday. Oh, you have to. Oh, you only live once. All these things. What's in your mind as that is when someone is saying, I'm going to skip it. One's enough. No dessert for me. What, and you're hearing that. What's in your mind? I would love for people to talk about that.
What's interesting, Gretchen, is I think most people, even the ones who do that, in their minds think, well, I'm not pressuring anyone. They can do whatever they want. You know, I don't think they mean to pressure,
yes.
or at least not consciously.
Yes. Yes.
They're just pointing out you only live once.
Yes.
I mean, that's you
in their
mind. Do with that what you will, you
yes.
know?
Yes. Yes. Well, that's a good point. Is it one of these things where, like, everybody thinks they have a sense of humor, but clearly some people don't. Nobody thinks, oh, I'm the one who's pressuring you to have a drink like a teenager, you know, at a pool party. Interesting. Well, I would love to hear people's thoughts on this, as I said, because I'm doing this. But here's kind of just like a fascinating piece of research that kind of comes into play here that I think is worth noting, is that research does show that we have a lot of influence on each other in terms of how much we eat and drink. It seems that we use our companions' eating decisions and drinking decisions as a way to pace our own decisions. And it seems as though what people aim to do is to have slightly less. And so it is the case that if everyone at the table orders dessert, it's almost like no one's having dessert. But if somebody doesn't have dessert, then that recalibrates what it means to have less. And so these one researchers wrote, the more we eat, the more our companion can eat without eating excessively. So we are likely to be pressured by our companion to have just a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And so one thing to keep in mind, I don't know if this helps you from an obliger standpoint, but maybe it's helpful to understand about kind of the social situation, is that people may have their own agenda that has nothing to do with you per se. It has to do with their own feelings about their own behavior, even subconsciously, about how they would like to see this you know, dinner or party or whatever play out.
Yes. It's very complicated.
It's super complicated.
A lot at play, you know, so, on both sides.
So complicated. Anyway, it occurs to me, if you don't know what we're talking about with obligers and upholders and questioners and rebels, you can take the quiz at quiz.gretchenrubin.com and it will tell you which of the four tendencies you belong to and kind of give you a little overview. I did the bonus episode a few weeks ago where I kind of went through the nutshell guide of the four tendencies. But yes, I would love to hear from listeners because, as I say, I'm really, really thinking very hard about exactly this question. So I would love to get people's insights and observations. And now it's time for another listener question as a listener question. As always, you can leave us a voicemail question at 774-277-9336, which is also 77-HAPPY-336. Or you can email us a voice memo to podcast@gretchenrubin.com.
And Gretchen, this week's listener did not give their name. So we have an anonymous question. The listener says, my husband and I are considering a cross-country move because our careers have stalled out where we live now and we'd have much greater opportunities on the coast. A big roadblock that we keep running into is that we are not sure we want to move 1,500 miles away from our families. We currently live in the Midwest, and neither of us has lived away from family for more than 6 months at a time. Although our happiness and our work lives may increase, we are nervous that we will lose the close connections that we have with loved ones right now. We have no children of our own, but two young nephews. My husband really worries that we will miss out on them growing up, but I think there must be some way to stay involved in family life, even if we move. He's an obliger, I'm a rebel. So my question is this, how do you stay connected to your family even when they live far away? I know you two have often spoken of your updates email with family, but I'm wondering if you have any other practical tips. You two have the podcast helping connect you, but is there anything else you do to stay connected with each other and your parents? Maybe listeners would have ideas too. Obviously, this is a big decision, but we can't be the only ones struggling with this. People move all the time.
Well, this is a great question because as the listener points out, like, people move so much and that this is a very common issue. And, you know, relationships are a key and maybe the key to happiness. And so thinking about it and taking it into consideration and trying to think about how it would play out, moving away from family is very, very wise. So I think this question shows a tremendous amount of wisdom in terms of thinking about what is going to matter to our happiness. It's not just about the job life, which is important, But this family life is very important as well.
Yes.
She mentions update. And just for anybody who doesn't know what update is, because we talked about this all the way back. I mean, I think it was like in episode one or something. This was a suggestion from our mother where what do you think? Listen, every week, every 10 days, we send an email and it's just, and it says update and it's just blah, 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 whatever's going on in your life. So it's like, oh, I went to my Mahjong thing, or it's like, oh, I hosted my book group, or, you know, my father will talk about what happened at golf, or, you know, how's, you know, just whatever the motto of update is, it's okay to be boring. And the idea is that we just can stay in touch with the minutiae of each other's lives. And that makes us feel much more connected.
Yeah. Now I will say when mom originally proposed this, it was supposed to be more like every other day, but a lot of times we send pictures and I think we sort of count that as an update, which is another thing that you can do to really stay present in each other's lives is send photos of, you know, it doesn't have to be a special occasion. It's just sort of what you're doing.
Yeah, like Eleanor was baking cookies and I was like, just send a picture of her baking cookies because they're just interested in even things like, oh, she got her hair cut or, oh, yes. You know, that's a cute, like, you know, I don't know. It's just, I love seeing pictures of Jack. I'm always like, oh my gosh, he's so big. But, you know, it's just fun to see what did the Star Wars cantina look like and all that.
Right. Gretchen, you and mom and I all do this is send pictures of what we're wearing.
Yeah.
And we'll say, does this look good? Or, hey, here's what I wore to the luncheon. And that's just a fun way to you know, kind of really stay in the moment with each other.
And on the subject of photos, I've talked about an app that I love called Time Hop, where it goes into your photos and will generate photos from like 1 year ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago. And I will send those because I'll be like, oh, remember, this is when we went to that swimming pool together, or maybe it's just like, oh, look, it was Barnaby when he was still a little puppy. Mm-hmm. That again is another way to connect to happy memories. And it's another just quick, easy, it takes 1 second to just forward that. But it's like, I'm thinking of you and here's this happy memory that we shared. So that's also very easy. More ambitious things, I would say the standardized plan.
Yes, I think that's huge.
Because if you're constantly trying to figure out, well, when are we going to see each other? When are we going to make the trip? It's very, very wearing. But like for me, I go to Kansas City for a week every Christmas, a week in August. That moves around a little bit, but not much. Elizabeth, for years, we had a standardized vacation where you and I would get together for President's Weekend. We don't need to do that now because we see each other all the time. But we did that when we didn't, because otherwise we were like, it might be
didn't know when we'd see each other.
And it's such a hassle to pick dates. It's such a drain. So standardizing it, saying like every 4th of July, every Columbus Day weekend, you know, like setting that in stone.
Yeah. And then you can also do standardized times to talk on the phone. And this is something our Uncle Tom does with our Aunt Susan. They have a phone date every Friday night. And so you could have that with various family members.
Yes. Just like college.
Like for instance, a lot of people on their commute, if they have, you know, hands-free phone, talk to their moms. I know a lot of people who talk to their moms every day during their commute.
Yeah. Well, it's like college when everybody would call home on Sunday afternoon. Now, the listener mentions that she's a rebel. And so one of the things is rebels tend to not like planning. They like to be spontaneous. Mm. So I would say to you as a rebel, I would remember this is what you want. You want to be able to stay in close contact with your family. That's what you want. You don't want to have to spend a lot of time fussing with it. So you choose to commit to a weekend because this is what's going to work for you. And you may want to be spontaneous and say like, oh, you know, let's go have this weekend together. Why don't you guys come out and visit us? But just remember that especially people who have children find it very, very hard to be spontaneous. And so that might be something that might be something to think about is that they will probably not be able to do things spontaneously if it's a terms of a plan.
I do think if you move to the coast, enticing people to come visit though is a good idea. Like saying, oh, hey, why don't you come, you know, Labor Day weekend and we'll go to Six Flags.
Yeah.
And it's like, because it's also expanding their world. And then suddenly they're part of your world. They see where you are. They know what you're doing. And that can make it feel more inclusive.
Yeah. On the other hand, if they are like, we just can't do it, you may have to be the ones to travel.
Yes. Know? Oh, absolutely. But I do think like inviting people with a specific plan in mind often sort of motivates them to come.
Yes, like absolutely.
At course, like, hey, it's Oktoberfest.
Yes. You know. Yes. Because something that can be done at any time is often done at no time.
Yes.
But sometimes people also resist the idea of like building these things in and formalizing them because it feels like it should be more kind of organic. And it reminds me of something that I'm obsessed with Flannery O'Connor, and she wrote in a letter about kind of church habits. She says, the things that we are obliged to do, such as hear mass on Sunday, fast and abstain on the days appointed, etc., can become mechanical and merely habit. But it is better to be held to the church by habit than not to be held at all. The church is mighty realistic about human nature. Mm. And I think it's same thing with family. It's like, it's better to have a call at 5 o'clock every Sunday than to forget to have the call for a month. So better to institutionalize it.
And just for the rebel, text chains are good because you can just pop in anytime. You can be part of the conversation or not be part of the conversation. You could text 20 times in a day or once every 2 weeks.
Yes.
And the chain can remain.
That text chain. Yes. Technology can be your friend.
And of course, Gretch, FaceTime has made it much easier.
FaceTime. Yeah, with little kids. So thanks for a great question. That's excellent. Any other ideas, send them along. It's a really important and very common issue.
Coming up, Gretchen gives herself a demerit related to her daughter, Eleanor. But first, this break.
Cruise in style in a Toyota Camry. With available all-wheel drive and multiple driving modes, you can accomplish anything. Experience cutting-edge available tech like a multimedia touchscreen and wireless connectivity complemented by the reliability of Toyota Safety Sense. It's no wonder the Camry has been the best-selling car in America for over 2 decades.
Or check out a new Corolla and define your style with a model for everyone, from the sleek and affordable sedan to the super efficient hybrid and the hip and agile hatchback. There's a Corolla made just for you. Toyota has even introduced their spacious Corolla Cross as a hybrid for when your adventure calls for both maximum capacity and efficiency.
And right now, your local Toyota dealer has vehicles in stock and is making delivery on new vehicles almost every day.
So don't wait. Buy a new Camry, Corolla, or Corolla Cross today. Visit buyatoyota.com for deals, details, and more. Toyota, let's go places.
Do you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help children really understand and master topics in a fun way with positive feedback. I mean, when Eleanor was young, she really, really struggled with math, and a program like IXL would have really helped her to get ahead, to keep up, study for a test. It's a great tool.
Don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And happier listeners get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/happier. Visit IXL.com/happier to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. Okay, Gretch, it's time for demerits and gold stars, and you are up with a happiness demerit.
Okay, well, this is a rookie parenting mistake, which I've now remedied. So I'm a sleep zealot. I'm very focused on the importance of sleep and everybody needing sleep. And of course, my daughter Eleanor is 14, and it's so important for teenagers to get sleep. Their body clocks are moving, so it's very hard for them to go to sleep. They want to sleep late in the morning, but they need to go to bed. And the rookie mistake is I was saying to Eleanor, you need to go to bed at a reasonable hour. You need to get enough sleep. And she would say, yes, 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 yes. Then every night I would be very irritated because, you know, she wouldn't walk Barnaby until late. And then she needed to come back and kind of get settled in. Then she needed to wash her face. And she's a slow mover. She's like a puttering kind of person. So it was very late. And then I'm like, I was saying to her, you need to go to bed at a reasonable hour. But I wasn't clear with her about what I thought that would be and why I had picked that time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, so we really sat down and we talked about it. I'm like, this is what I think your bedtime should be. This is why. Can you live with that? And we talked about how, like, what would have to happen when in order for it to be lights out. And so I was like, okay, well, why didn't we do this from the beginning? Because there was a lot of nagging and annoyance. But now, now she has an exact bedtime and she seems like she gets it. So we'll see.
So you've fixed your demerit. That's good.
By giving the demerit, I was like, okay, I think that the solution is not, it's not a subtle solution. I just need to like sit down and do it. So Elizabeth, what is the gold star?
All right, Gretch. Well, I have to give a gold star to the Downton Abbey movie. Everyone is seeing it. I think it's been a surprise hit. It is just a needed break from life. You know, I think it's just like everyone is feeling stressed and there's a lot of anxiety, sort of free-floating anxiety in the world. And this Downton Abbey movie is just a break from all of that. You know, it is really true that the stakes are like, you know, will the silver be polished? And Sarah and I were like, we cannot work until we have seen the Downton Abbey movie. We were like so desperate to see it and to have a break from life. And it was a wonderful break for those 2 hours. And I feel like it's the only 2 hours we've been relaxed in like 2 years.
Well, I know what I'm going to do this weekend. And that is it for this episode of Happier. Remember to try this at home. Treat yourself like a dog. Let us know if you tried it and if it worked for you.
Thank you to our executive producer, Chuck Reed, our engineer, Bob Tabador, and everyone at Cadence 13. Get in touch. Gretchen's on Twitter at Gretchen Rubin, and I'm at Elizabeth Kraft. Our email address is podcast@gretchenrubin.com.
And if you like the show, as always, please be sure to tell a friend. That is how most of our listeners come to us. Also, if you want to connect with other Happier podcast listeners or other readers who read my books, you can join my free app called Better. And you, if you are an obliger who would like an online accountability group, you can also do that there. Go to betterapp.us if you're on desktop or search in the App Store for Better Gretchen Rubin. It's free. It's tons of fun. Also, do you want to get regular book recommendations from me in your inbox? Each month, I write a blog post about what I read that month, and occasionally I write lists of recommended books on a topic. If you want to get those, sign up for my newsletter at gretchenrubin.com/newsletter, and you can sign up there. And if you're reading Happier at Home with a group, you can download the free discussion guide at gretchenrubin.com/resources.
Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward. So, Elizabeth, I never watched the show Downton Abbey. I think I watched like one season. Do you think I would still like the movie?
That is a good question. If you want to spend a lot of time in a massive house, then yes.
Sign me up. I'm going. From the Onward Project.